Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Straz Center, presenting the National Geographic Live Multimedia Speaker Series. The next installment is Beyond the Invisible Secrets of the Blue Holes with Kenny Broad, cave diver and environmental anthropologist, Tuesday, March 27th at 7 p.m. More at strazcenter.org or 813-229-STAR. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Dr. Carrie Krieger, founder of Save the Frogs, about an array of amphibian topics. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. It's Laura Veers with her version of Little Lapdog Lullaby here on Talking Animals. That's Laura Veers doing a lovely rendition of Little Lap Dog Lullaby. An animal song of sorts, of course, leads us into today's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Carrie Krieger, the founder and executive director of Save the Frogs, which bills itself the world's leading amphibian conservation organization. One of the organization's missions is to inform people that amphibian populations have been rapidly disappearing worldwide. And with that plight in mind, Dr. Krieger created Save the Frogs Day, an international event taking place this year on April 28th. We'll hear about that event and how you might like to get involved, the organization itself, and more when we speak to Dr. Carrie Krieger in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to the Renaissance Festival in Tampa, which continues each weekend through April. And we'll speak briefly with Sherry Silk, Executive Director of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, which organizes Bark in the Park, happening this Saturday, March 10th at Al Lopez Park. Saturday marks the 25th annual Bark in the Park. So we'll chat with Sherry about that later in the hour. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcement segment. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. We'll start with our own event on the horizon, by which I refer to the Talking Animals Music Night featuring 10 great bands from the Tampa Bay area and beyond performing animal songs. It's happening the end of this month, March 31st at New World Brewery, offering a musically diverse evening from Americana to Calypso, from reggae to rock, from folk to funk, and more. All animal songs performed by these 10 bands. Sons of Hippies, Johnny Cakes and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypso, Rebecca Pulley and Rob Pastore, Ricky Wilcox and the Moonsnakes, Sunset Bridge, Talk to Mark featuring Scott Elliott, WMNF's own Scott Elliott, the host of All Souls edition of It's the Music, coming up right after Talking Animals today as always from noon to three. Tribal Style, Acme Jazz Garage, The Happiness Machine, and Rayzilla's PBS featuring Ray Villadonga, one of the hosts of Step Outside, Wednesday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight right here on WMNF. So it's a pretty cool lineup, yes? Yes, I think so. And whatever their style or genre, again, all these bands will be playing animal songs. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're starting to hear what some of these bands have in mind, and one band has decided to do a set of only chicken songs, while another's including a Black Cat, Atomic Dog, Janet Jackson, George Clinton medley, and so on. So again, going to be a huge blast. Don't miss it. Tickets will be a mere $8 in advance, $10 at the door. Again, and a benefit for WMNF, WMNF.org for tickets, or call 813-238-8001 and speak with Miss Julie. She will fix you up. And by the way, Dolores Vidal was originally announced as part of this lineup, but had to cancel when he hit a schedule conflict. We'll miss him. We're huge fans here. But the good news is that he'll be at the New World Brewery tonight. So go, Loris. All right, on to actual animal news. This comes from Reuters, Dateline Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad signed a bill that could result in penalties on animal rights activists who pose as employees or attempt to get inside agricultural production facilities and other ways to expose possible animal cruelty. The law in a major farming state has outraged a leading animal rights group known for its controversial tactics to expose animal cruelty. PETA, which said it may mount a court challenge and threaten the possible boycott of Iowa. The bill, labeled Ag Gag by opponents, was signed on Friday, but news of Branstad's approval did not emerge until Monday. Iowa action could set a precedent for other agricultural states, as it is the largest U.S. producer of corn and soybeans, has the largest number of hogs, and the sixth largest cattle herd. If somebody, quote, if somebody comes on somebody else's property through fraud or deception or lying, that is a serious violation of people's rights, and people should be held accountable for that, Branstad told reporters on Monday. The adoption of penalties in Iowa follows a series of cases where animal rights activists gained entrance to what they call factory farms, including chicken and egg, hog and cattle production and processing facilities. One recent example, McDonald's stopped buying from egg supplier Sparbo after an undercover investigation by the animal rights group Mercy for Animals found dead hens in cages and live chicks discarded in plastic bags along with dead ones. Sparbo had unwittingly hired a Mercy activist to work at its facility. Such actions have also prompted food companies to reconsider suppliers who can find hens laying eggs in small cages and sows in crates while they are nursing piglets. Quote, this is going to come back to haunt Iowa agriculture more than they could ever imagine, said Dan Matthews, PETA's senior vice president. Iowa singled itself out as the state with the most to be ashamed of, and I don't think that is a very strong message to send to consumers. Francis said the new law would not affect whistleblowers, employees who see something and report it. Track that one carefully, of course, here. Moving into California, and this comes from a blog by the Los Angeles Times, and it says, animal activists have pledged to continue their campaign to pressure Governor Jerry Brown to preserve California's shelter law, enlisting state and local lawmakers and vowing to highlight their cause in capital budget hearings. The law, which lengthened the amount of time shelters must hold stray and abandoned pets before euthanizing them, is on a list of mandates Brown wants to eliminate. The governor has said that shortening the hold period from 6 days to 3 would save the state about $46 million per year. Armed with a petition of more than 13,500 signatures, members of the Stray Cat Alliance met with Brown's finance staff last week to convince the governor otherwise. Christy Metropole, the group's executive director, said officials were not persuaded. We don't believe the governor's office understands this issue fully yet and how dire the future will be for animals if it is permanently repealed, she said in a statement. Californians need to keep up the pressure and explain this is precedent-setting law that saves lives and saves tax dollars. For its part, the administration has cited a 2008 report from the Legislative Analyst's Office that found, quote, no evidence, unquote, that longer holding periods have resulted in increased adoptions, the intent of the law. Brown's office had also said the state can no longer afford the cost at a time when it is slashing social services to balance the budget. And again, we'll be watching that one. We spoke about this a few weeks back when we had Nathan Weinograd on about this very topic and related ones. Back to locally and back to tonight. There'll be a lecture about butterfly gardening with Florida native plants. You can learn to use Florida native plants to attract butterflies to your landscape by visiting the monthly meeting of the Florida Native Plant Society, Pinellas Chapter. Everyone is welcome. You can call 727-244-0312 or email Pinellas at fnpschapters.org. This session will be held again tonight from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Pinellas County Extension. And this weekend, lots going on of all kinds, definitely including in the animal world. There's Bark in the Park this Saturday, March 10th from 8 through to noon, Al Lopez Park. We'll get into a lot more details about that. We have a brief chat later in the show with Humane Society of Tampa Bay's Executive Director, Sherry Silk. The Humane Society of Tampa Bay is the organizer of Bark in the Park. Also, Saturday, March 10th, is the Tampa Bay Pet Expo held at the Florida State Fairgrounds from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And there'll be more than 100 exhibitors of pet-related products, information, all kinds of animals for adopting, demonstrations, more. Shorty Rossi, star of the hit series Pit Boss on Animal Planet, will be there as the official spokesperson, and more. So you can find out more about that by going to TampaBayPetExpo.com. And further into the month, there's the St. Paddy's Day luncheon that will help Friends of Strays. Friends of Strays annual luncheon is Saturday, March 17th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Hilton St. Petersburg Bayfront. Downtown St. Petersburg, portion of the proceeds from that will benefit the Friends of Strays programs and services for homeless animals. Alicia Perez, television personality and animal advocate, is the MC. There'll be a silent auction, three-course meal, fashion show, and more. But I think space is limited for this one. They do ask for an RSVP, so go to friendsofstrays.com or call 727-522-6566. And also that same day, St. Patrick's Day, there's the 20th annual Mutt Strut, Eagle Lake Park in Largo from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the strut itself is about 11 a.m. And the event will include vendors, wag bags, adoptable pets, food vendors, contest games, demonstration, and more. So same event they've been doing for many, many years, obviously, but I guess at a new location this year. You can find out more by going to HumaneSocietyOfPinellas.org. And yet another thing on the horizon further into March that I wanted to mention is Party Like a Pinup. That's going to be taking place Saturday, March 24th, the Cuban Club in Ybor. And it's underway at 8 p.m. Let's see. Benefiting Little Darlin's Pinups for Pit Bulls, and there'll be a pinup theme, burlesque shows, silent auction, live bands, food, and more. And Shorty Rossi will be at that too. So anyway, it's gonna be a lot of fun. You can find out more at partylikeapinup.org. And I think that's gonna do it for now. We'll time permitting, maybe hit a few other items later in the show. But right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves, as always, animal-oriented comedy. I was looking around for something frog-related, and found this by Mitch Hedberg. Here's a portion of a piece called Smacky the Frog from Mitch Hedberg on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I went to England to tell jokes. I wanted to do Smokey the Bear joke in England, so I had to ask the English if they know Smokey the Bear was, but they don't. Because in England, Smokey the Bear is not the forest fire prevention representative. They have Smacky the Frog. It's just like a bear, but it's a frog. I think that's a better system. I think we should adopt it. Because bears can be mean. But frogs are always cool. Like, never has there been a frog hopping toward me, and I thought, man, I better play dead. Here comes that frog. I've never said, here comes that frog in a nervous manner. It's always like optimistic. Hey, here comes that frog. All right. Maybe he will settle near me, and I can pet him and put him in a mayonnaise jar with a stick and a leaf to recreate what he's used to. I certainly have to punch some holes in the lid because he's damn sure used to air. Then I can observe him. And he won't be doing much in his 16-ounce world.
All right. It was Mitch Hedberg, the late, great Mitch Hedberg, in fact, with a portion of a piece called Smacky the Frog, taken from his album Strategic Grill Locations. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Dr. Kerry Krieger. As I noted earlier, Dr. Krieger is the founder and executive director of Save the Frogs, which builds itself the world's leading amphibian conservation organization. Dr. Krieger holds a PhD in environmental science and created Save the Frogs Day, an annual event that promotes amphibian education and conservation across the globe. This year, that'll be held on April 28th. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Kerry Krieger to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Krieger.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
It's great to be here.
Hey, since Save the Frogs, the organization, and of course the day, as well as all your creation, before we get into the details of those things, let's find out a bit about you. I mean, for example, as an undergrad, you studied engineering. You have a BS in mechanical engineering. So it might not be the most predictable path from there to a PhD in environmental sciences in Australia, no less. So maybe you could just give us a little bit of a guided tour of that journey.
Okay. That's right. I studied mechanical engineering at the University of Virginia, and towards the end of college, I definitely got a lot more into the environment. I was doing a lot of hiking and liked being outside, and I started traveling a lot and noticed that there's a lot of environmental damage pretty much anywhere you go in the world, and I thought that was a big problem and wanted to be a part of fixing that. So I started thinking about environmental science as a career and went to Hawaii a year after I graduated college and volunteered there for a summer helping some PhD students study endangered birds. And that definitely confirmed that I did want to go into ecology and get my own PhD degree. So, yeah, I ended up going to Australia. I had been there before. I thought it would be a great place to study science because there's rainforest there and lots of frog species. And they, just as in America and in a lot of places in the world, have had a lot of problems with frogs going extinct. So I spent 4 years in Australia studying the ecology of an amphibian disease called chytridiomycosis that's driven about 100 amphibian species to complete extinction in recent decades.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's a lot for us there to sort of delve in more specifically to. First of all, it sounds like even as you were studying and working on your PhD that frogs and amphibians was becoming an interest. I mean, was that kind of a matter? I mean, was it a matter of sort of zeroing in on amphibians, or were amphibians what sort of drew you further into that kind of work and those kinds of academic pursuits?
I knew before I started my PhD that I wanted to work with frogs. I never had a frog fascination growing up, but definitely when it came time to think about what I wanted to do for my PhD project, I started thinking about frogs a lot because, one, I like hanging out at streams and being at streams, so I was thinking about what type of animals live at streams, and I found out that frogs in particular are rapidly disappearing. And back then, about 10 years ago, scientists weren't even too certain why the frogs were disappearing, so that added to my interest in it. And yes, I did my PhD work and really enjoy working with frogs, and it's incredibly important, and frogs face so many threats that at the end of my PhD, I started Save the Frogs, which is America's first and only public charity dedicated to protecting amphibians.
Well, cool. So let's let folks know if they're just tuning in. We're speaking with Dr. Kerry Krieger, founder and executive director of Save the Frogs. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Dr. Krieger a question about frogs, other amphibians, or just offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So I guess, you know, one of the, if there's perhaps more than one $64,000 question, you've kind of answered why frogs. But what are all the things that have put frogs in such such great peril?
There's six main reasons. The number one reason, especially in lowland areas around the world, is habitat destruction, because there's so many humans on the planet. We take up a lot of space with houses and buildings and chopping down forests for timber and agriculture and reasons like that. Draining swamps in Florida, there's lots of, you know, problems changing water bodies around. And
sure.
So every time we destroy habitat, frogs have trouble. That's a huge problem. Another problem in Florida, especially, and lots of places in the world, pesticide use,
mm-hmm.
pollution, because gravity brings everything down into the water bodies where amphibians live and breed. And amphibians have permeable skin, so they're absorbing pollutants directly into their skin, and that causes a lot of problems. Florida, in particular, is one of the states with the highest usage of atrazine, which is an herbicide that can turn male frogs into females at 2.5 parts per billion. We're currently working on getting atrazine banned. So that's a big problem for frogs. And global warming, climate change, precipitation levels change as we change the Earth's climate, and then ponds dry up, cloud forest levels rise up the mountain and dry up habitat. So that's problematic. As I said, my PhD was on chytridiomycosis, which is a disease, skin disease caused by a chytrid fungus that's spreading around the world. I noticed before I came onto your show, you were playing a clip about pet frogs. And the pet frog trade is huge in America. We ship about 100 million frogs around the world each year for use as pets, food, laboratory usage. And it's with very little disease testing. So sick frogs get shipped around the world, they get set free, and all of a sudden their disease is out in native populations causing problems. And, yeah, frog legs, up to 1 billion frogs are taken out of the wild each year for use as food. Americans import about 20% of the world's frog legs. And then also Florida, especially invasive species. I'm sure you know about the problem in Florida.
Sure.
That's a big problem. I'm in California right now. We've got a huge problem with non-native trout being stocked in mountain lakes that eat all the frogs. American bullfrogs, which are native to the eastern U.S., are imported by the millions into California for use as food. They're the largest frog in North America. They eat anything that fits in their mouth. So there's so many problems for amphibians, which is the reason one-third of all amphibian species around the world are on the verge of extinction right now.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, that as I was, you know, gearing up to speak, I felt like, well, some of the things you've just cited, you know, it's pretty bleak for our frog friends, but also just the scope of the problem. I mean, you know, even those of us who might, you know, feel particularly fond of animals or plugged into animals, you know, just somehow might not have noticed or had occasion to notice maybe the degree to which the amphibian populations have been disappearing. But I think it was on your site that I saw, you know, something like nearly 200 species or thereabouts have completely disappeared since 1979.
200 already extinct. And
yeah.
There's, you know, 2,000 endangered species around the world. And there's, you know, relatively little work being done on frogs, which is why I started Save the Frogs. to get people interested and to get, you know, we need a whole lot more people working on the problem. And everyone out there, please go check out SaveTheFrogs.com, which is our website packed full of info on frogs. And also, yeah, as you mentioned before, Save the Frogs Day is coming up April 28th, 2012. I conceived and coordinate Save the Frogs Day, and it's growing every year. This year, our goal is to have 200 educational events in 30 countries, and we're about halfway to that goal right now. So we've got a month and a half. So everybody out there, the goal is to get people in their own community actively, you know, promoting amphibians in to people who live near them. So please go set up an event, talk to your local teachers. And one of our supporters, Avalon Tyson, is going to be holding an event at Camp Bayou, which is outside of Tampa. So go check out her Wandering Whimsy website or the Camp Bayou website, and you can find out about that.
Okay, Dr. Krieger, we'll definitely was going to get into all those in due time, but let's cover a few other things here. And in fact, I know there's a lot of folks who are interested in speaking with you that I heard from before the show, and some of them are here now. Let's take one of those callers now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Krieger.
Yes, I was wondering, is Puerto Rico the only place where you could find the coqui?
The coqui is native to Puerto Rico, and they love it in Puerto Rico. It's also, it's in other places non-natively. I know it's in Hawaii. In Hawaii, it arrived there maybe about 11 or 12 years ago. And, now they're living there, and people in Hawaii think they're loud. I'm not sure why, because people in Puerto Rico love their call. So yeah, they are certainly non-native in other places.
Okay. Well, that answers the question. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your call. So, Dr. Krieger, maybe I've done this in slightly backwards, but I think one thing that might be really important is for many of us who, again, wouldn't you know pretend to know a fraction of what you do about frogs. Maybe you could tell us from your standpoint what some of the most compelling traits of frogs are that might many of us might not know or just might not have been smart enough to appreciate, you know, yet.
Okay. Well, they're really important in the food web. They're right in the middle of the food web. They're eating ticks and mosquitoes and flies, pests of our agricultural crops and, you know, disease vectors. So they're keeping us healthy in that respect. And they're also food for fish, birds, snakes, monkeys, even dragonflies and beetles eat frogs' eggs and tadpoles. So they're incredibly important in the food web. They have lots of valuable chemicals on their skin, and so there's a lot of scientific medical research on frogs. There's frogs that have been found with chemicals on their skin that kill HIV, painkillers. So lots of our medical advances come from frogs. 10% of our Nobel Prizes in physiology and medicine have been awarded to research done on frogs. So it's really important to keep them alive for many reasons.
Wow. Well, that's mighty impressive. And with the unfortunate sort of destruction of so many species that we already discussed, I mean, how many types of frogs are there currently in the world, or to the extent that people can, you know, count those?
Yeah, there's about 7,000 known amphibian species, of which 6,000 or so are frogs and toads.
Okay.
800 are newts and salamanders, and 200 are Sicilians, which are a limbless amphibian that lives in Central South America, Africa, and Southeast Asia.
And I take it from some of the things you were mentioning earlier that the challenges to these 7,000 species to their survival vary quite a bit geographically, and what's specific maybe to that area. Like you've mentioned you're in California, you've mentioned some things that are happening here in Florida. I mean, so really everywhere where you go, are there things that are similar to what you mentioned before, habitat, et cetera, pesticide use, pollution, or are there other things that are very specific to certain areas of the world that threaten those amphibians there and are not necessarily found elsewhere?
It definitely changes where you go in the world. So one of the, as I said, in lowland areas, habitat destruction is a huge problem. But in the mountains, all around the world, it's chytrid fungus that is the primary threat, because the chytrid fungus prefers cool temperatures. It is most deadly at cool temperatures. So if you go up to mountain streams in the Andes or in Central America, Australia, or here in California in the Sierra Nevadas, then that's the number one threat, chytrid fungus. So yeah, it definitely changes where you are. I was in West Africa in September in Ghana, and 90% of the rainforest there has been chopped down. So obviously habitat destruction is the number one problem there. If you go out to farmland, then, you know, pesticides, fertilizers are going to be a lot larger of a problem.
Wow. So really, yeah, I guess wherever they are, there's one or more direct threats to them, and some are overlapping, and some are very specific. You know, again, I was struck, first of all, that there was a Save the Frogs, you know, sort of location in Ghana, and but yeah, I guess with those rainforests being cleared to that extent, that would again put them in great vulnerability and worse. So let's take another call here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Krieger.
Hi, this is Melissa in Plant City. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Great. Dr. Krieger, I'm in Plant City, Central Florida, and one of our biggest problems is the invasive species. And we had a real problem with Cuban tree frogs and noticed a huge decrease in all of our native frogs around here. So I had to learn to actually catch them and euthanize them. And did that over a two-year period, the last couple of years, and haven't seen one in a long, long time. And they seem to be really coming back. And so all of our natives are coming back, and I think we've been successful with that in my area.
Okay, great. Yeah, so as I said, invasive species are a big problem in lots of places. What we're doing here in California, we succeeded last month in getting the city of Santa Cruz and the county of Santa Cruz to ban the importation of non-Native American bullfrogs. Our plan is to get the entire state to ban non-Native frogs, and I definitely suggest in Florida that people start working towards that goal. So because some of these species, we know they're bad. They're being imported in on purpose. So we shouldn't be importing in bad species on purpose. Obviously, some invasive species arrive by mistake.
Right. The Cuban tree frogs came in through the Caribbean, through fruit shipments, et cetera. And so accidental introduction, but they have spread, I think, as far as Gainesville, you know, through Miami, Homestead area, and have gone up to North Florida. And they totally eat all of our native frogs. They're voracious eaters. And they're huge. So they need to go.
Okay, well, as with any invasive species, it is very difficult to eradicate something when it arrives. It's good there's people working on it. But, yeah, we definitely also need to prevent new introductions.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So thanks a lot.
Thank you for your work. Thank you so much for what you've done and who you are, and bringing the problem of amphibian decline to the world.
Well,
thank you for your call. I appreciate that. So, so Dr. Krieger, let's, and we have a few minutes left, and I want to be sure we don't give Save the Frog Day short shrift at all. So you touched on it briefly, but first of all, it sounds like it's really got quite a reach to it. Did it start out with the international bent, or is that sort of developed in the years since you first launched it?
It's always been international. In its first year, we had 40 events in 15 countries, and last year we had 145 events in 21 countries. So we're trying to grow it, and it does have international appeal. There's frogs having trouble all over the world, and very few, you know, people or organizations working to protect them. So people definitely seem to like it, and it's good for good way to get kids interested in frogs, but there's all types of events. It's not just school kids. And on our Save the Frogs Day webpage on SaveTheFrogs.com, we have been adding lots of event listings to it. So, yeah, we like to get people all over the world active.
Well, a couple things, Dr. Krieger, is maybe you could just give us, like, three examples, you know, of Frog Day events either that have happened in the past or that you already know are happening for the 2012 event, just to kind of give a sense of you know, the variety of things that are planned, because I think one of the reasons we wanted to talk this far in advance of the April 28th event this year is to hopefully spur some interest in people creating their own Save the Frog event.
Okay. Last year, the event that I led was at the steps of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, D.C. We had a rally to raise awareness of frog extinctions and to call for a federal ban on the pesticide atrazine that I mentioned before that turns male frogs into females.
Right.
We've had lots of events at schools. We've had protests at Frog Legs restaurants. As I said, in Tampa at Camp Bayou, one of our supporters, Avalon Tyson, holds events at Camp Bayou to raise awareness and get lots of people thinking about frogs. In Wellington, Florida, some people go out removing weeds from ponds. So I think last year they removed about 1,000 pounds of weeds to help oxygenate the habitat. We have scientists in nature centers taking people outdoors to show them frogs and their wild frogs and their native habitat. So lots of different things going on.
Cool. Well, with that in mind, I think with any luck, if technology is being kind to us, I think we now have Avalon, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, cool. Okay, so we have on the line now, Dr. Krieger mentioned her earlier, but this is Avalon Tyson, who lives locally here in Tampa. And tell us a little bit about yourself, Avalon, and your Save the Frogs Day sort of project and some of the other things that you've done.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm hosting the Tampa Area Save the Frogs Day event, which will be on the last Saturday in April from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It will once again be at Camp Bayou Outdoor Learning Center in Ruskin, which is in Hillsborough County, just south of Tampa and Riverview. There will be educational frog games, activities, and everyone can be part of Florida's largest human frog course ever. The course will be used on a video to challenge others to croak for amphibian conservation awareness. I started collecting frog calls from people last week at a zoo, and it was a lot of fun. Our event is free with a suggestion donation of $5 per person, and that will be split between Save the Frogs and Camp Bayou. Everyone will also be entered into a prize drawing contest for frog prizes. You don't have to pre-register, but it would really be helpful to me and other volunteers. Just visit my website at www.conserveitforward.com, because pay it forward and conserve it forward, for more information in the pre-registration form. I can't wait to see you all there. Thank you. Bye.
Well, okay, Avalon. Well, thank you very much. Great job. And you'll not only probably make it as a biologist or some sort of scientist, but perhaps as a broadcaster as well. So, again, it's her website is conserveitforward.com for a few more of those details. So Dr. Krieger, we have maybe just a minute or two left here, but let's say that I or someone listening today was inspired by what you said or certainly inspired by Avalon to come up with their own idea for a Save the Frog event. What's involved? How do we take the next step?
Well, the best thing to do is go to SaveTheFrogs.com. Right at the very top, you can click the Save the Frogs Day icon. And the best thing to do is go look at our pages that list all the events that have taken place in past years, and you can get lots of ideas on different things and find, you know, what of that interests you, and it'll probably inspire you and help your imagination to come up with a cool, fun, successful event.
And maybe this varies from event to event, but what sort of resources or support does Save the Frogs offer for some of these events?
We can send out educational materials, and once you register your event on our site you're eligible for some free materials that we can send you. Mm-hmm. And definitely, you know, you can email us at contact@savethefrogs.com if you want to talk, and, you know, we can help you out.
Cool. And I really should emphasize that the SaveTheFrogs.com website is really just terrific, jam-packed with information, and really got all kinds of wonderful content and pictures and information, and just generally about some of the amphibian conservation issues we've discussed, but, of course, about Save the Frog Day. And so, Dr. Krieger, I mean, we just about, I think, have reached the end of our time, but if there were one sort of overriding factor issue about amphibians you'd sort of like us to take away from this conversation, what would that be if you were limited for arbitrary reasons to just one?
Well, I just say that people should bear in mind they're perhaps the most, that frogs are perhaps the most rapidly disappearing animals on the planet, so they really need our help right now. And as the human population increases, those threats will increase unless people become very proactive about saving frogs.
Cool. I think that might be just the perfect place to leave it. So we've been talking to Dr. Kerry Krieger from Save the Frogs. The website, again, is SaveTheFrogs.com. And the event, again, Save the Frogs Day, is April 28th. And all kinds of information about that and how you could maybe plan your own Save the Frogs Day event and plenty more is found at SaveTheFrogs.com. Dr. Krieger, thank you again for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to the Renaissance Festival in Tampa, which continues each weekend through April. So the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, which, by the way, I happen to have a good authority, will be played by one of the bands performing at the Talking Animals Music Night. In a moment, we'll chat with Sherry Silk about this Saturday's Bark in the Park event. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We'll take our guesses on that Name That Animal tune off the air. But right now, we want to welcome Sherry Silk back to Talking Animals. Are you there, Sherry?
I am. Hey, Duncan. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. And, wow, the 25th Bark in the Park.
We've been doing this a long time, haven't we?
Yeah, you're sort of getting the hang of it, I think, by now. So that's very good.
I think we know what we're doing. But, you know, this year, because it is our 25th, we wanted to do, you know, some things that were going to be special. And plus, not only is it our 25th, Duncan, we actually, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, turned 100 years old this year. So it's, you know, it's a milestone in both ways.
That's for sure. So what's on tap, on the one hand, that Bark in the Park visitors have come to expect over the years, and then maybe let's hear about some ways that you're undoubtedly marking the 25th anniversary and the 100th anniversary, I guess, for that matter.
Okay, well, great. Well, I mean, it is a dog walk, but I'll tell you what we've found over the years, a lot of times people just want to come to the park. I mean, Al Lopez Park is a great place to hang out with your animals anyway, and just, you know, visit with all the vendors and get all kinds of activities. And so yes, it's the walk. Registration starts at 8:30, and you can do the little walk around the park. The walk actually starts right at 10 o'clock. Not a very long walk. It's just over a mile. You can do that with your dog. You don't have to do the whole thing if you don't want. You know, we're pretty, you know, whatever you kind of want to do and what you're comfortable with. If you just come and give us $25, this is something new this year, $25, you get a T-shirt. You get a T-shirt and walk and you get to do all the fun activities. And then we have also different levels where you get different prizes. As you, if you raise $50, you get some other prizes, and goes up to $1,000 where you actually end up with umbrellas and bandanas and goodie bags and actually two tickets to our Tuxes and Tails event. So there's graduated amounts that you can raise. But, you know, if you don't have a lot of money and you just want to come out and have a beautiful day and support us, you give us $25 and we'll include you in all the festivities.
Okay, Sherry. Well, I mean, we're not actually allowed to mention financial amounts or cost of things. I should warn you. That's fine. That's just part of our being a sort of a nonprofit, non-commercial thing and part of our deal. But anyway, there's all kinds of, you know, further information or how that would work by, I guess there's really sort of effectively two websites, really. You could go to the HumaneSocietyTampa.org website,
right,
or you could go directly, I guess, to firstgiving.com/HSTB, right?
And, right, that is correct, yes.
Yeah. So, okay.
But there's all kinds of neat stuff. Like, let's say you don't feel like walking. Maybe you're not into the whole exercise thing. There is going to be so many wonderful vendors there, all kinds of things for your dogs to do. We have a doggy treat area where it's a bunch of straw and your dog gets to go through and get treats. There is an agility course that's kind of contained. It's different. We've never used this company before, where your dog is in a contained area and you get let it off leash, and they can do all kinds of really neat things, tunnels and jumps and everything else.
Cool.
Just to see how athletic your dog really is. We're going to have lots of adoptable. We're going to have our adoptable animals there. Hillsborough County Animal Services will be there. Many of the rescue groups will be there. So, you know, if you're looking to even add another animal to your home, you know, it's a great place to adopt an animal as well.
Cool. Plus, as I recall, there's always, you know, kind of some kooky fun, like the costume contest and other contests. So let me ask you this, Sherry. I mean, over the history of this, you know, now venerable event, are there some particularly sort of wonderful or weird moments that just come to mind that just sort of stand out, like just things that just happen a given year that you just thought, oh, my gosh, this is nuts, or this is just really poignant, or whatever it might be?
Well, you know, a couple of things. First of all, as far as nuts, some of the costumes that people come up with, one of them is the pet look-alike contest to see if you look like your dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people, you know, dress just like their dog in similar colors, which is, you know, pretty standard. But some people, it is over the top. In fact, I don't even know how they get their dogs to wear some of these costumes. But it's pretty amazing. I think they, you know, practice all year. And in the talented dog contest, you know, some of them are just the basic sit, down, roll over that you kind of expect. But some of these animals are really, really quite talented. And it's very nice, at least for me, to see of so many of our alumni, animals that were adopted, you know, maybe a couple years ago. There was one particular dog. He was like a little beagle mixed dog that had been coming every year. She adopted him 10 years ago as a puppy. And the dog, you know, comes to our Bark in the Park. And it's just, you know, when you're in this business, it's not always an easy business. And when you see that we make these lifelong matches between people and their pets, it's very gratifying to see them in such a fun, you know, fun environment.
For sure. No, that's really, really cool. So, again, we're sort of running out of time here, Sherry, but let's run through the key elements. So, again, it's this Saturday. It's March 10th.
Yes.
It's at Al Lopez Park.
Yes.
It's 8:30 to noon.
Right.
And again, as you say, you can sign up for the walk, you know, when you get there, but for one reason or another, you don't choose to participate in the walk, you
just come on out and have fun with it.
You're still welcome to come and you know, the good thing, I think, for some people who have busy schedules, kids with games, other stuff going on, is by noon or so, you're on to whatever your other Saturday activities.
You're right. And one other thing we add, you mentioned kids. We're actually having a craft station, so there's going to be some prizes for the kids that make the best craft. So that's something new that we've added this year, too. So it'll be fun for, if you want to bring the whole family out, the kids will have something to do as well.
Cool. And is it animal-related crafts or just general
crafts?
Oh,
it is kind of animal-related.
Yeah, I would think so.
Of course it is.
Yes. Why wouldn't it be? Cool.
Of course.
And one more time, again, for people to find out more information. Now, it's there's really obviously any time to sign up through Saturday morning, right, for people
even want to bother with signing up beforehand, you can just come out. That is fine.
Right.
You can go on our website, you know, www.humanesocietytampa.org, or we also have a designated website, barkintheparktampa.com, and that will take you right to everything you would need to know.
Perfect. Okay, well, good luck. Congratulations on the 25th Bark in the Park.
And
everybody will be sure to have a blast. So thanks again, Sherry.
Thank you, Duncan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, March 14th, with another edition here, of course. I hope you'll join me then. Also, be visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts for past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. Beyond all the great music Scott always plays, he's also featuring an interview today with soul singer and Gasparilla Music Festival act Lee Fields. Cool. Can't wait to hear that. So we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is by one of the 10 bands performing at the Talking Animals Music Night, Sons of Hippies. Will they play this song March 31st at New World Brewery? I don't know. Or at least I don't know yet. But it's playing now. This is called Ants Falling. New music from Sons of Hippies, taking us right up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. right, that's Ants Falling from Sons of Hippies, one of 10 bands performing at the Talking Animals Music Night, Saturday, March 31st, 8 p.m. to midnight, New World Brewery. $8 in advance, $10 at the door. Get your tickets now by going to WMNF.org or calling here during station hours. Talk to Miss Julia at 813-238-8001. It's going to be a lot of fun. And animal songs like you've never heard them before. So coming up shortly will be the NPR News and, of course, Scott Elliott with the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Today, not only featuring all of Scott's great, great music, but an interview as well with soul singer Lee Fields, who's performing this weekend at the Gasparilla Music Festival. So lots to stay tuned for on 88.5 FM WMNF. Thanks so much for listening. NPR News is next. I'll see you next Wednesday.